This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring author, psychologist, and daily contributor, Siobhan Scott.
More and more evidence continues to mount against Rex Heuermann, the man accused of being the Long Island serial killer, the Gilgo Beach murderer. And the evidence and the stories, they all seem to kind of have the same sort of theme. Sex worker somehow gets involved, seeing him, meeting him, either survives or dies. The ones that have survived, some of them are coming out and telling their stories of interaction, and it's never pretty. We have the Taylor, who was a bottle girl at a nightclub, having to interact with him at a home that she was brought back to, and ended up pulling a taser out, trying to get away from him. This was back in 2010. And then we go back to 1994, the story of Mary Poe, who suddenly was shocked to hear a gunshot go off in the car and didn't realize till she escaped that she had been struck in the back of the neck by a bullet from Rex Heuermann. She could have easily been another victim of his. Joining us to discuss this, Siobhan Scott, psychotherapist and author. I mean, a lot of this seems very par for the course for what we know about Rex Heuermann. These women, they have no reason, I would say, to be coming out and sharing these stories now. If anything, they have more reason not to, because they're not part of this anymore, but clearly want to get their story heard and let them know that, look, yeah, Rex Heuermann, he's a pretty standout guy, and that's the guy who did these things to us. What's your take on these allegations that have come out?
As you say, it fits a pattern. You know, vulnerable women, sex workers, very unlikely to go to law enforcement when things like this happen. Because we would think if this was all going on for so many years, how in the world did he get away with it? But I think the vulnerable women are less apt to report, and that's horrifying. Absolutely horrifying.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to understand the people who were killed. Obviously, that didn't go to law enforcement because they weren't around anymore. And then people involved in that circle not going to go to law enforcement and say, hey, so-and-so was murdered, because, again, the tension then goes on to their deeds and nobody wants to get in trouble for that. But some of these, yeah, they survived. They got away from it. But is that it? It was the stigma. It was the, well, if I do say anything, I'm going to get charges thrown at me, not related to Rex Heuermann, but just because of the life that I'm leading and what's going on. Is that why this culture is so violent and so just horrible for individuals, and why things like this can happen, and why so many women just simply go missing and no one knows anymore? Because it's a culture of, you know, you're not going to snitch, you're not going to say anything, and understandably so.
Yeah, it is understandable. And so many of these women, I think the ones that go missing, their families have basically written them off and, you know, just sort of cut the ties. And we don't know how many more victims there may be out there. It's just, one of these awful, awful stories.
We've also been hearing about Rex Heuermann getting counseling in prison for his depression. He says he very much misses his wife and his life and all of that. I guess it could be a bit of a testament to, and it's not a guy, in some ways it is, as broken as our system is, it's like, oh, well, we have resources to give Rex Heuermann counseling in jail. There's plenty of people on the outside who would love counseling and don't have the resources to do it. So in one way, you're like, oh, well, that's good that they're offering that. And another, it's like, well, this is kind of messed up the way we prioritize this. What's your thoughts on that? And as far as what sort of counseling is going to be beneficial for Rex Heuermann, if anything, right now?
Yeah, I was trying to think, what would the treatment plan be here for Rex? You know, it's probably minimal and it's probably very superficial. If I were in that setting, the treatment plan would be nothing other than let this guy talk and vent, you know, which, if he's in isolation, as he is, that's very stressful for anybody, including serial killers. It's stressful to be in isolation. And so just that, if it's 30 minutes of human contact, you know, a high profile case, they probably don't want to look like, you know, they're being unfair or unkind to him. And most prisons, if not all, certainly the ones I'm familiar with, do have psychiatrists on staff who primarily just prescribe medication.
Yeah.
And that's basically to keep people calm and keep them from, you know, increasingly maybe psychotic or violent behavior. And so it may be something like that, where he gets a 15-minute appointment with a psychiatrist every couple of weeks. So I would guess it's not in-depth psychotherapy, but sort of some kind of little Band-Aid to say, look, we're doing the right thing here.
Doing the right thing, is it basically just don't kill yourself right now? Like, let's just keep him alive so we can prosecute this man, because he has every reason to try and kill himself probably at this point?
Yeah. And no doubt an interesting case for the person who's talking with him, trying to go, okay, what's the truth here? And I doubt he's confessing. I doubt there's, as I say, no deep work going on. You know, he may be talking about religion at this point, which is another thing people tend to do, is get religious. So
that's an interesting point about the religion. But if he were to confess, I mean, how is that affected by doctor-patient confidentiality? Is that a thing in prison?
That's a good question. That is a good question. Does HIPAA stand in a prison situation like that? My guess is no, that there may be, and this again is just my speculation. I've never actually been prison staff, so I don't know exactly how the confidentiality works. But my guess is that there's a waiver, you know, that if you do disclose something about a violent crime, that is not protected under the confidentiality rules. That is just my guess. Again, may differ from place to place.
Because if you're on the outside, if someone were to come and talk to you and they were talking about threats of, I mean, because it's two different tenses here. There'd be the threats of hurting someone or themselves like ahead of time. That's mandatory. You have to report that something has to be. But what about after? If somebody comes to you on the outside, they're not, you know, and they haven't been caught or charged with anything, and says, I killed somebody, or Rex Herman's coming to you as a patient and admits all these things to you. Can you report that, or is that violating HIPAA at that point if it's it's after the crimes were committed and someone's
How I would look at that is that this person is at risk for doing it again.
Okay.
Therefore, it would not be protected by HIPAA.
Okay.
And that's often the case with child molest cases, where someone will come in and confess, you know, if they were saying, I'm thinking about molesting a child, report.
Yeah.
If they came in saying, I molested a child in the past, but they're not currently molesting a child, they're still at risk.
Oh, sure.
For molestation. So I would report.
Okay. I was curious how that all logistically works.
It's a good question. Yeah, it's a good question.
Yeah. So
confidentiality thing and crime is very tricky. But for something like, I embezzled money from a former employer. Yeah. Not reportable. Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to life, that's where...
Yes. Harming people. Yep.
Very interesting.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.